From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. Oh, what a beautiful day we have working here in Central Texas. Hope you got some sunshine where you are. We'll see. The sun's by people saying that we're going to have like 20, 30 years of cold weather. Put a very interesting video on the front page of One Radio Network. You might check it out. John Casey, and he's making the argument that that's what's going to happen. Cold winter's coming next 25 years, colder than ever. It did it before in the around early 1800s, a couple other times they had 20, 30 years of really cold weather. So who knows, just turn on your TV, they'll tell you what's going to happen. We're going to talk about diet, nutrition, with a doc who advocates a vegan diet. In just a second. Vegan, that's right. A real doctor. We're going to talk about the beginning, middle, and end of your health issues. 40 years ago, in October 1978, I was shaving and just kind of woke up. And I always remember that moment, and from that moment on, I began looking at things like who we are, why we are, where we are, and what's it all about, Alfie. And I began that search with health stuff in 78, and it was so interesting. A few days after that incident in my bathroom, looking in the mirror when I woke up, it was like this thunderbolt hit me. It's crazy. Anyway, it happens, and somebody handed me the book, Are You Confused? By Paavo Arola. And of course, that's no accident. It's 2 days after I woke up. And so I've been looking at health things ever since and interviewing all kinds of people. And so we're going to talk about my perspective, 40 years. I thought a little 40-year anniversary next hour, and give you some ideas of some of the things that I've learned and this idea of, we'll talk more about it. Okay, first up here is an interesting gentleman. He's a vegan, and not only is he a vegan, but he's a pretty well-known doc and very well-respected doctor, MD. He's a adjunct associate professor of medicine at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences in Washington, D.C., president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and founder of Barnard Medical Center. His name is Neil Barnard. Hope that's how you pronounce it. I think it is. He's lots of different awards and places that he belongs to. He is a fellow of the American College of Cardiology and recipient of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine's Trailblazer Award. He's written 70 scientific publications, more than that, 18 books, best New York Times bestsellers, all kinds of things about food and brain and weight loss and diabetes. President of the Physicians Committee, Dr. Barnard leads programs advocating for preventive medicine, good nutrition, and higher ethical standards of research. Lots of different research. He's written for the Journal of American Medical Association. Barnard Medical Center is primary care in Washington, D.C. Lots of research, lots of writing. And so this should be very interesting. And let's say good morning to Dr. Barnard. It is Barnard, right, sir? Right.
Yeah, any way you say it is okay with me.
Okay with you, yeah.
But I accent the first syllable like Barnard.
So how are you doing this morning? Do you have a nice
Thanksgiving? I'm doing fine.
Yeah?
Everything's great.
Yeah. So did you have tofurkey for Thanksgiving?
I did not, but some people do like to have that, and it beats the heck out of having the one that you have to slit its throat.
Really? Yeah. So how long have you been on the vegan diet and talking about it?
Well, I grew up in Fargo, North Dakota.
Did you?
I don't know if you've ever been there.
I've seen the movie, and it's cold.
Well, if you've seen the movie, you get the idea. My father grew up in the cattle business, and so did my grandfather and great-grandfather as far back as I can trace. And my dad did not like raising cattle, and he left it and went to medical school, and he was the diabetes expert for Fargo and eastern North Dakota. But we ate like we were in the cattle business. So for me, that was my upbringing, and I hunted and all that kind of stuff. But in the mid-1980s, when I was around 30, I threw it all out and have been eating a vegan diet ever since. And it's not only a good thing. It's really the sort of the foundation of getting people healthy. And I went into medicine really kind of thinking you just get diabetes because you've got genes for it. And you might have high blood pressure and high cholesterol because it's genetic or you've gained weight or something like that. And I did not realize what is now abundantly clear, which is that we eat our way into these things. And although you and I grew up in the center of the country on American foods, and we think it's totally normal to have roast beef or chicken or fish or steak or, you know, whatever it might be, and cheese and so forth, science has caught up with us. And we now realize that those are the reasons why we have epidemics of diabetes and heart disease and even things like Alzheimer's disease that are emerging. So our work has been to do this research, and then when we come to this rather troubling eureka moment, which is the very foods we grew up with and that maybe our families sold and that we had liked are actually hurting us, then we have to deal with that. And so,
okay. So you're saying that there's science that can prove that, you use the words you want, that having a vegetarian diet, say in the morning, rather than eating, say, let's just do a hypothetical here, 2 cage-free, grass-fed chicken eggs, no soy, no GMO, coconut oil, I don't know, you know, just a classic, as pristine of a breakfast as you can with animal foods. You say there's science proving that you didn't eat that, you would be better off long-term longevity and disease.
Yes.
Really? Where is that science?
First of all, your tax dollars have paid for it.
Oh, good.
And
I'm glad.
So I hope you got your money's worth.
It beats going to war, Doc, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's right. First of all, our research team has done much of this work, but that's a drop in the bucket. There have been researchers from around the world looking at this for an extensive period of time, and this is why I write books. I've written about 20 books, and my most recent one, The Vegan Starter Kit, tries to help people to figure out how to do this. But to give you an example of the kind of research that we do, in 2003, the U.S. government, through the NIH, gave us a very nice grant and said, okay, if you're so smart, why don't you test diabetes diets? We brought in a large group of people who had type 2 diabetes. And half of them got a conventional diet for diabetes, which you know what that is. It's cut calories to lose weight and don't eat too much bread or other carbohydrates. And then the experimental diet that we compared it with was a vegan diet. And when I say vegan, that doesn't mean you're from the planet Vegas. It means that you don't eat animal products of any kind.
Nothing.
Right. There's no meat, no dairy, no eggs. But there's a whole lot of other stuff left, which hopefully we'll talk about. And we followed these individuals for about 5 months, and what we found was that their improvement in their blood sugar control was dramatically better in the vegan group. It was 3 times better than the others. I will never forget the first person I saw whose diabetes absolutely just disappeared. He had diabetes for years, and it completely went away on this diet. He was on no medication, and we had thought that was just impossible. Mm-hmm. Now we see it all the time. And then we followed these people for an additional year after that, and they stayed well, by and large. And so many other researchers have used similar techniques, and we have found that maybe I should describe why meat causes.
Well, let's just follow through with what you're saying, because this is interesting. So, how many people on the one that you did? How many people, Doc, were on either side? How many did you follow?
In that particular study, it was 99 people in that study.
Total or half 99?
Total.
Okay, so you had like 40, say 50 people. So, but on the one side, I'm real curious. I mean, it would stand to reason. I'm just kind of digging in here. It would stand to reason if you have 50 people on one side just eating a standard American diet, going to McDonald's and whatever they're doing, and just eating stuff and eating Cheetos and drinking sodas. I mean, come on. We know that they're going to have bad blood sugar and all of that. Wouldn't that be different, though, if somebody on the other side, and you're 50 on the other side, would really know what they're doing, eating a purely organic diet, really good food combining, not eating all that sugar, and still eating animal foods? I mean, has that study had ever been done?
That's what we did.
You had these people on the 50 really eating good organic foods and everything?
I'm not going to say it was good. What I'm going to say is they followed exactly the conventional advice. Let me call them the conventional group. We had a vegan group and a conventional group. The people in the conventional group got exactly conventional diabetes teaching.
Sure.
They met with a dietitian every single week, who came in and taught them as a group, here's how you do it. They had one-on-one appointments, and they followed this diet. They were reducing calories to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
but they filled out diet records, mm-hmm. tracked what they ate, and we selected motivated people. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they did badly. This was not the Twinkie group or the potato chip group or, you know, whatever. These people had diabetes, and they knew diabetes can kill you and lead to blindness, and they were motivated to do well. And they followed exactly the American Diabetes Association type of advice. And they improved. The test that we use is called A1C, hemoglobin.
Yeah, we know that one, yeah.
That's a test for blood sugar control. And it dropped by about 0.4 in the people where medicine and everything else was staying exactly the same. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
The vegan group did exactly the same thing. They came in every week. They got a lot of support, except that they were not eating any animal products. And at the time, we didn't know exactly why this was going to work, but now we do know why. And their improvement was not 0.4, it was 1.2. In other words, it was three times better, and frankly, better than any oral drug. But just to cut to the chase, this is not, if a person wants to suggest that a vegan diet is somehow a strange thing, if you and I get on the train, and we go up to New Haven, Connecticut, and you go to Yale University School of Medicine, there are researchers there who have MR scanners, magnetic resonance scanners, the same kind of scanner that you go in if you've ripped your meniscus in your knee, and they're going to do an MRI. Our patients, in the studies we're doing now, go there, and we stick them in the MRI machine, and we do what's called magnetic resonance spectroscopy, and we are looking in their bodies at what is happening, and here's what it is. When you start a vegan diet, there is how much animal fat in your diet? There is none. And when you keep oils really low, there's not much of any kind of fat in your diet. And when you come out of the MR scanner, what I can notice is that the fat in your muscle cells and your liver cells is starting to go away. And when the fat that's accumulated in your muscle and liver goes away, your natural insulin works better, and can get the sugar out of your blood and stick it in your muscles and stick it in your liver, just like it used to when you were 14 years old. And that is the whole issue in type 2 diabetes. The reason people get type 2 diabetes is not from eating bread or drinking a soda. It's from eating cheese and meat and fatty foods that cause the accumulation of fat in their muscle and liver, which I can now show you on a scan. And we need to turn it around. And the fact that doctors are unaware of this is simply because they just don't read enough research.
Yeah. You say another fatty food, so cheese, what would be other fatty foods? Cheese, meat? What are you categorizing
among
there?
Among animal products, cheese, meat, eggs, they all have animal fat. And then also on the there are foods that are vegan but that are still pretty fatty.
Sure.
And that we would discourage a person from eating, like potato chips, or if you're young and healthy, maybe peanut butter is okay. But if you're trying to lose weight, I would skip the peanut butter because it's pretty fatty.
This fat thing. I mean, didn't we go through this in the 90s, Doc, where they, you know, the Framingham thing came out, and then everybody went on a low-fat thing, and all the ladies, well, most of America, they were out there in the early 90s not eating fat, but it was our experience, and I was in the food business back then also, that all these ladies, they were eating these non-fat yogurts and low-fat, and they would, by the time the weekend came around, they were so starved for some nutrition, good fat, that they just, you know, a lot of ladies just couldn't take it, couldn't stay on that low-fat diet. I mean, good fats are not bad for you, are they, Doc?
The scenario you just described is, tell me if I'm wrong with this.
Okay.
Is a fiction. It's something that people who like the low-carb idea have invented, and the fiction is, in the 1970s, people realized that fatty foods raised cholesterol levels, and so they have advised and made people fat. And so they advised people to go low fat.
Right.
And the fiction continues. Everyone raced to the store in this fictional scenario, and they all bought low fat Snackwells.
That's what I was talking about. Yes. Yeah.
And somehow they all had cupboards filled with Snackwells, and they ate them all the time. And because it's so high in carbohydrate, they got fatter and sicker than ever.
Sure.
This is completely made up.
Oh, you mean what you just said is made up?
This is a complete fiction.
Ah.
What I just described is the fictional story that low carbohydrate enthusiasts like to tell. Americans never all raced to the store, and they never all bought a whole bunch of low fat products. And
I would disagree with that, sir. I was in the food business at that time. I mean, you can go into Whole Foods today, and do you know that almost every yogurt today is low fat in 2018?
Let me go back to
50 of them. All right.
It's not as if we haven't been tracking what Americans eat. And through the National Health and Nutrition Education Survey, every several years, people go door to door and they track what Americans eat. And Americans never reduced their fat intake.
Really? Okay.
That didn't happen. This is a completely made up fiction. They never reduced their fat intake. And if you go around, look at where diabetes is the worst. It's worst among economically disadvantaged people.
Sure.
And if you, that's where they have the most diabetes, the most obesity. And do you want to tell me that poor people who have a lot of diabetes, maybe people in the Appalachians or wherever where they just don't have any money, are you telling me that all those people raced off to the store and were buying Snackwells cookies and that's what made
them? No, not at all.
That's ridiculous.
They weren't even in on the game, were they?
They're eating stuff like KFC
and
cheap junk.
Sure.
And fat intake never fell. Now, what did fall, what did happen is it's true that people did start eating more food in general. And it may even be true that the percentage of the diet that was fat dropped.
Yeah.
Because if you add a lot more calories, the percentage that's fat can go down. But Americans never stopped eating fat. And in fact, if you look at how much cheese Americans eat,
yeah, lots.
It's worse than ever. Sugar has been dropping since 1999. Sodas have been dropping.
So sugar, like just sodas and stuff like that?
Any kind of sugar. Mm-hmm. If you take all the sugar on the American plate, it has been dropping for about 20 years. And that's because in the late 90s is when bottled water started kicking Dr. Pepper off the shelves at the 7-Eleven. And so people are consuming less sugar than they have in many, many years. I'm not saying that sugar is health food, but I am saying that that's not the reason people are fat. They're fat because of eating cheese and meat and then fried foods and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when you eat a lot of fat, fat is very dense in calories. And it stores, it tends to be fattening. And I'm not asking people to accept this on faith. Doctors like me study it. So we bring in people, and we actually put diets to the test. I have a study now going on where people come in, and we put them on a low-fat vegan diet, and we're tracking their weight and their metabolism. And it's fascinating because they're not counting calories. They're not limiting portions at all, but instead of spaghetti with a meat sauce, they're having spaghetti with tomato sauce. And they're eating as much as they want, and they're losing between a half pound and a pound every week, which is slow, but there's 52 weeks in a year, so they end up losing a lot of weight. And this is the whole reason that I wrote this new book called The Vegan Starter Kit, which I'm hoping people will get 20 copies and give 19 of them away to all of their friends who are frustrated with the diets that they've done before. And I encourage people to try a vegan diet for 3 weeks, 21 days. You will be absolutely convinced that, A, it's surprisingly easy, very tasty, and your health is in a better place than it has been on any other kind of diet.
And the one that you're recommending that people would get on, do you have them eat some of the good fats like avocados and nuts and other coconut oil and things like that, or are you really low on the fats too, Dr. Barnard?
It depends on your health, but let me first say something. Coconut oil is terrible. Coconut oil is like eating Vaseline. It's heavily marketed. A few years ago, people started to really market their acreage of coconuts, and they made up another story, which is that even though coconut oil is extremely high in saturated fat, the story is it won't raise your cholesterol like butter will. So researchers like me, researchers have tested this, and they bring people in, and they'll give them butter, or they'll give them different kind of oil or nothing, and they'll give them coconut oil. And do you know what happens? Their cholesterol, it shoots right up. So if a person buys coconut oil, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn that I could sell them to.
Well, in response to that, I mean, there's plenty of research. Dr. Uf Ravnikov in Germany, plenty of research, lots of peer-reviewed studies that say the cholesterol number is absolutely meaningless. Meaningless as far as atherosclerosis or as far as myocardial infarction. Meaningless.
Okay. If you want to go in that direction, you may, but...
Well, I'm just saying what I've heard people say. You can't just diss those peer-reviewed studies, can you, Doc? I mean, if you're going to look at studies, you got to look at them all.
Yes. We can confidently say that something that raises a person's cholesterol level will increase their risk of cardiovascular disease. By that, I mean a heart attack, especially, and also increase their risk of Alzheimer's disease.
Really?
Now, there is some variability. It is true that just as there are smokers who do not get lung cancer, in fact, most smokers don't get lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So many do that you don't want to risk it. Yeah. There are people who eat rotten food and they don't get heart attacks, but that's not very many. Half of Americans have a heart attack as their last event on Earth, and Alzheimer's is going way, way up. So... No, I think it's really important to take these things seriously. But on the other hand, let me...
Wait a minute, take what seriously? Like, what did you just say there? I mean, what about these peer-reviewed studies on the cholesterol? Are you saying that they're wrong?
I'm not sure what study you're talking about.
Oh, well, there's just, I mean, you know, when you start talking about studies, you know, I mean, I can't list them or have you read them or anything, but there's plenty of them out there on the cholesterol thing. Okay, let me take a quick break here. If you'd like to join the show, 888-663-6386. And definitely, if you want to play around with vegan, I would recommend this one because, I mean, obviously, this fellow has done a lot of homework, and it's called the Vegan Starter Kit. I don't have it yet. I'm getting on the way, and I'm looking forward to looking at it. It's Dr. Neil Barnard, and if you'd like to join the show, 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Stay right there. One of the fun and easy things we do with this Pearlseum product is brush our teeth with it. But as we look deeper into this product, taking it internally is really kind of magical.
Calcium metabolism basically affects the whole metabolism and also your whole energetic systems. Literally, the calcium is the powerhouse for our energy, and it also carries the energy everywhere. So whatever we do, you know, either thinking or doing any work, it's all, you know, calcium is a carrier to put, you know, get the energy over there.
And recently, we had a Professor Paul on our show on the electromagnetic fields, and he explained very clearly how these things were interfering with the proper calcium getting into the cells.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I completely agree with his research, because everything is actually a field, you know, vibrational field. Even our body is a field. And also pearl can really, you know, really alter the whole vibrational field because it has this crystalline structure. And this crystalline structure carries the most positive energy and also information and matter. And so when it gets into the body, it is changed a completely vibrational field. So it can heal us at a very deep level.
Well, Dr. Rulin Hsu, we love the sound of that. Heal us at a deep level. Why not give it a try? Click on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. You'll see the ad, Green Container Pearlseum, OneRadioNetwork.com. I think it's fair to say that most of us would like to have more energy to do what we do. We recently talked with Living Streams Wayne Blakely about this idea. So the body's set up to get rid of pathogens or toxins if it has the bacteria or the biome?
The bacteria and the nutrients is what it does. What the digestive is. It's 70 to 80% of your immune system, your digestive tract. Backup systems are your antibodies. That's when everything else fails. And the primary system is your digestive tract.
If the digestive system is so compromised because of all, whatever, glyphosates, antibiotics, and all the things we stress and bad food and whatever, then the body will produce antibodies to try to protect it from assaults?
That when it gets overgrown, instead of balancing the body like it's supposed to, it gets into a critical stage where the antibody starts starting to produce. So there's, when your body creates an antibody, it takes more energy to create an antibody than any other function of the body. It has to create it from scratch. The antibodies are working overtime on everybody. And that's why everybody's so tired all the time. That's one of the reasons.
Could be one of the reasons why many people, including Patrick, feels better and has more energy taking these Living Streams probiotics. If you'd like to learn more, you can call Marilyn at 360-912-2981. 360-912-2981 with Living Streams. She'll give you some particular information about various probiotics in the Living Streams corral of products, and they're all in our store on OneRadioNetwork.com. Okay, we have one more day of a big sale with Sir Thrival. We've had it all weekend long. And if you use the promo code INFINITY, let me see if you click on there. Yeah, if you click on the front page and use the promo code INFINITY, I think it's about 12% today. So they've been working their way down, and we started at 20%. So any Sir Thrival link that you'd like to go on, use promo code INFINITY, and it's the last day, yeah, 12%. I'm sorry, Infinite. We had so many sales, sorry. Infinite, INFINITE, 12% plus free shipping. Any Sir Thrival link, that's the pine pollen, the elk velvet antler, shaga, the reishi, colostrum, bone broth, stuff like that. And then also the digestive bitters. So 12% today, the last day of this sale. Infinite, INFINITE, with any Sir Thrival link. Having a good conversation with the author of a new book called The Vegan Starter Kit, and we're going to dig into a little bit and find out why you might want to get this. If you'd like to try this, leading medical authority, Neil Barnard, I think he's written like 20 books. I mean, lots of research, 70 papers. Dr. Barnard, just for the record, let me say that I totally, for what it's worth, I think you're correct that every human would do better overall on a vegan diet. I mean, I just do, you know. I'm kind of asking questions because there's a lot of folks out there listening who do pretty well, you know, or do very well on these paleo, you know, kind of diets, and they lose weight immediately. But you're saying that if you're eating grass-fed meat long-term, that you're pretty convinced that you'd be better off in the form of getting some kind of imbalances in blood sugar, heart disease, without eating the meat at all. Is that what you're saying, right?
Yeah, you know, my grandpa raised grass-fed beef. And I have driven grass-fed beef to the slaughterhouse in East St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
And unloaded them off the truck and sent them to get hung up and killed. And let me tell you something that it's, you know, you can understand why people say grass-fed, because they're concerned about animal fat, and rightly so. And if you, instead of putting them on a feedlot, if you leave them out in the pasture, there is less animal fat. But the difference isn't enough. And if you really want to get away from animal fat, there's nothing like eating beans and rice. So in our research studies, that's what we have done. And this was quite different from how I personally grew up. But I adopted it myself, and I found, first of all, the foods are much more enjoyable than what I had been doing before. But the most important thing is just what it does to your body. We bring people in now, and we put them on a vegan diet, and after about 10 days or so, they will say, I'm never hungry, and I love the food, and I'm losing weight without trying to. And they'll say, wait a minute, you know, you're not exercising, you're not eating small portions, I'm just losing weight automatically. And the heavier you are, the more weight you lose. And it usually starts out as belly fat that goes first. Thigh fat is a little more resistant. But people lose weight very, very
What about
easily.
People that don't want to lose weight and just fine with the way they are, their
yeah.
weight?
Yeah, but, well, first of all, you're the envy of your friends if you're already slim. But if you're already slim, a vegan diet will not make you blow away. It just helps you to stay at your ideal weight. But then your benefits are, it helps your cholesterol to stay low. It has, and that's because there's no cholesterol or animal fat in it. And it's a really good way to reduce cancer risk as well. As you know, women and men are at high risk for colorectal cancer. And women, particularly high risk for breast cancer, for men, prostate cancer. We're not going to abolish these completely. But when people are on plant-based diets, they're getting much better nutrition than they would get from a meat-based diet. You know, meat doesn't have vitamin C, or it doesn't have the antioxidants to the extent that you would find in vegetables and fruits. So you have the protectors, and as meat goes through your digestive tract, it encourages the production of carcinogens, which tends not to happen with a plant-based diet. So it's a good way to reduce your cancer risk. Not magic, but it's going to help a lot.
So I would suspect then you have folks that eat their share of carbs, of brown rice and things like that during your ideal diet, vegan diet. They're eating brown rice and oats and things like that, carbohydrates.
Do people eat rice on our diet?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
All you want.
All you want. Wow. See, now I could go for that. It seems to me that I and others tend to crave carbs when I tend to crave carbs if I don't get fat in there too. What's the connection? Could that be?
Well, you know, carbohydrate is a huge group. It ranges from like the starchy part of grain,
yeah, all the way,
starchy
huh?
part of beans, and pasta, all these things. And I think people crave them when they haven't had them, because carbohydrate breaks it in the same way that gasoline powers your car. You know, your car loves gasoline. That allows it to go. Your body craves carbs because carbohydrate breaks down to release glucose, which powers your brain, and so also your muscles. And if you haven't had any in a while, your body really wants it. And carbohydrates aren't bad. Carbohydrates are really good. Now, you want to be selective because it's an enormous group. You know, M&Ms have some carbohydrate in them as well as a lot of fat and goo and stuff. But what I'm speaking of are healthy grains, beans, starchy vegetables, sweet potatoes, these kinds of things. Very, very healthy, and there's no reason to limit those. You can have them as much as you want and easily stay slim.
Well, there's certainly, I mean, if you look at it totally like that, I mean, some people tend to think about vegan as, I don't know if you've ever been to these vegan potlucks. You know, they're really vegan, right? They're just little vegetables and sauces. But you're talking about a whole wide spectrum of things, from potatoes to brown rice pasta maybe, and things like that.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it tastes good.
If a person has diabetes, my goal is to just make them well.
So all this, the starches and the brown rice pasta and all that, that doesn't raise blood sugar? I thought that was one of the reasons why people get high blood sugar fasting in the morning.
I'm so glad you asked me that. That's okay. The most important question that a person could ever ask. Because when people come into our clinic here at the Barnard Medical Center, they say exactly that. I've got diabetes and I'm trying to control
right.
it.
Right. So if they I do carbs, bread, right?
This is what they'll say. This is not right, but this is what they'll say. If I eat carbohydrate, my blood sugar goes up, mm-hmm. so I've been trying not to eat it. And here's what happens. Blood glucose, sugar in the blood, is trying to go to your muscle cells because that's what allows you to move. Glucose is fuel for your muscles. And glucose can only get into the muscles if insulin would act like a key and opens the cell membrane to let the glucose into the muscles. And if you got a lot of fat built up inside the muscles because you ate a chicken salad sandwich for lunch or any other fatty food, and the fat builds up in the muscle cells, mm-hmm. insulin can't work, and you can't get the sugar out. Our goal is to get the fat out of the cells, and a vegan diet is obviously the way to do it because there's no animal fat in it. If your cells are filled with fat, then anything you eat can raise your blood sugar. Bread or potatoes.
So that's what's going on in our culture.
The problem that they have is that they've got a condition called
insulin resistance. Yeah, tell folks what that is. Yeah, tell.
That means your cells are filled with fat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about your muscle and liver cells in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Have microscopic fat particles inside your muscle and liver cells.
Mm-hmm.
That stops insulin from being able to escort glucose into the cell. And so we call it insulin resistance. The cell is resistant to insulin because it's all jammed with fat. And so you come in our clinic and we'll say, all right, tomorrow morning, let's have a bowl of oatmeal topped with blueberries and cinnamon or strawberries. And for lunch, we're going to have chili, but it's not going to be a meat chili. It'll be bean chili. And your dinner will top your angel hair pasta, not with a greasy cheese sauce, but we'll put light tomato sauce, and you can have vegetables on the side, and I don't care how much you eat, but as you notice, there wasn't any animal products in there
nothing
at all.
Right. And folks will lose weight on that?
Dramatically. And their blood sugars will stay high for about 3-4 days. I mean, it depends.
Yeah.
For some people, they drop instantly. Others, it takes a week or so. But what's happening is the fat is getting out of their cells. The diabetes process is reversing, and their blood sugars start to fall so much so that every single patient who does this has to have their phone number of their doctor, because very soon they're going to need to have their medicines reduced. And then when they get off their medicines, as they often do, they just celebrate. Can you imagine what it's like to have had diabetes for a year or 2 years, and you thought this is a one-way street to more problems, and suddenly you don't have it anymore, or you can reduce your amount of medication.
Well,
it's people celebrate and they adore it, and it tastes so good when you realize it's curing you.
I wonder why, you know, this whole thing about paleo came out, 4, 5, 6, 10 years ago maybe, you know, paleo diet. And I've known so many people, lots of people, emails, you know, guests, that, you know, they're on a regular diet and they just cut out the carbs, right, and just did meat, vegetables, right? And they would lose weight big time. I wonder why that is.
Sure. The paleo diet sounds really attractive to people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it makes you sound sort of like a hunter in a loincloth.
Well, you're a click gatherer.
Could be on the cover of Men's Health magazine. You know.
Come on now.
Got a nice short name. And the paleo diet is not all bad. It's kind of a funny diet because the whole idea of paleo, it's paleolithic. So it's the idea is we're going to start. We're going to look back in time and eat the way our forebears did.
Right, right.
So we're going to say, I'm not going to eat any product of agriculture because I'm going to pretend I don't know how to plant anything. So you aren't going to eat grains or beans, for example. But you can have fruit, which is okay because our Paleolithic ancestors knew how to pick stuff off trees. But then they don't want to go back before people figured out how to kill animals. So they'll start with about the Stone Age and end with agriculture, and that's the sort of the band of time they want to eat from. And I'll tell you what's good about that. Overall, it's a terrible diet, but what's good about it is dairy is gone. There's no ice cream on the paleo diet at all. There's no cheese, none of that stuff. It's gone. They'll have fruits and they'll have vegetables, and that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
So those are certainly moves in the right direction. And getting away from sugar and goo like that, that's a good move too. You know, there's no Paleolithic Dr. Pepper, so that's all good. that's all good. What's bad about it is if you went back further in time and you discover pre-Stone Age human beings weren't eating meat at all, And that's a much healthier
diet. How do we know that? How do you guys know that when you say those things? I often wonder. I mean, do they actually look and find fossils of these guys and they can prove that they didn't eat meat?
Not so hard to do. Huh? If you look, first of all, if we just think logically for a second, human beings are not carnivores. We are, whether we like to admit it or not, the truth is we are great apes, like a gorilla or a chimpanzee or an orangutan or a bonobo. Those four species and human beings make up the family of great apes. Great apes never consume yogurt or ice cream or any of those dairy products. Milk has only one function to not only great apes but any mammal, and that's to raise their young, and they are always weaned. Human beings are the only species that ever decided they wanted to drink milk all life long. So I think we can agree with pretty good confidence that milk is not a natural thing for the human body, and so that rules out cheese and everything else that goes with it. And that's a good thing. And the paleo people don't have dairy at all, and that's so that I'm praising them for that.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. The paleo, they don't do dairy, right? Yeah.
No. And that's a good change. That's a good change. And the thing about meat, the great apes for the most part do not eat meat. The exception is you will occasionally see chimpanzees killing a monkey. It's maybe 4% of what they eat. It's very creepy to see, but they will do that. But apart from that, the great apes don't eat them, and they eat huge amounts of fruits and shoots and leaves and those kinds of things, and they do very, very well on that. And I remember asking Richard Leakey, the famous paleoanthropologist, how did human beings become carnivores? And he said, no. We are not carnivores. We've never been carnivores. But once the Stone Age gave us arrowheads and axes, we could kill animals and remove the hide and eat meat. And once we had fire, you're on to something. Before that, it's really pretty much a challenge to kill animals and eat them.
Yeah. Well, our teeth aren't even set up for meat, really, are they? I mean, I think...
Oh, exactly.
I think I've heard that.
If you wait for your cat to yawn, your cat has long, protruding teeth, same with a dog. But if you stumble into your bathroom and turn on the light and look in the mirror and open your mouth, you discover that your canine teeth are no longer than your incisors. And that change occurred at least 3.5 million years ago.
And isn't there something with the length of our guts and that it's kind of saying that we're not carnivores as well?
Right, that's right. If you're a cat and you eat animal products, you're eating a mouse, you're eating the guts of an animal, carcinogens form as a result of flesh going through your digestive tract. You want a very short colon to eject that quickly. Human beings, like other herbivores, have a really long digestive tract that's designed for high fiber foods. It takes time to remove the moisture and so forth from the fiber that you're eating, and you're not forming carcinogens, so you can have a nice long digestive tract, and that's us.
I want to go back a little bit to the brain. So many people suggest that the brain is really almost, it's just full of fat, a lot of good fats, and they advocate eating not necessarily animal fat, but other kind of high fat nuts and avocado and things like that to keep the brain functioning well with Alzheimer's and dementia and all that. Anything to that?
Well, your brain does have fat in it, but the fat's not leaking out, so you don't have to restore it with your breakfast. It's sort of like your body is completely covered with skin, but it will be whether you eat skin or not. I'm being a little fanciful with you, but the point is you don't have to eat fat in order to put fat in your brain.
Where does it come from then?
Well, your body can synthesize fats, and don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting you should not eat any fat at all. If you have even a sprig of broccoli, and if you send it to a laboratory, they would tell you it's about maybe 8-9% fat. And much of that fat is omega-3. So that's very good fat. The fats where we run into trouble, the worst are the animal fats, like cheese. It's very highly saturated fat. That's the worst of it. But I would also keep even the vegetable fats pretty low. You are not going to and should not avoid all vegetable fats. Because there are traces of them in beans and vegetables and fruits. Not a lot, but there's enough for human
health. How about extra virgin olive oil? Are you okay with, fan with that?
I would have it as an olive. So if you eat an olive, you're going to get traces of olive oil. What I would not do if I was trying to lose weight is take 10,000 olives and press the oil out and throw away all the fiber and all the pulp of the olive and just eat the concentrated oil. It is true that when you call it virgin, it has a certain cachet to it, sort of like Madonna. But the fact of the matter is it's a refined product, just like taking the sugar out of sugar cane.
Sure, whenever you squash anything, it's refined.
And that's what olive oil is. And they put a beautiful label on it, and they'll charge you $85, and they'll send it directly from Tuscany in a basket. You know, but and olive oil is much better than dairy fat and much better than chicken fat. And when I say better, I mean this. Saturated fat is the bad fat that raises cholesterol. Chicken fat is about 30% saturated fat. That's terrible. Beef is about 50% saturated fat. If it's olive oil, it's about 14. So it's better, but it's not as good as not having the saturated fat because your body doesn't need any saturated fat.
Here's an email from Leroy. He's in San Francisco, or the city by the bay. Patrick has had many guests on the shows over the years that suggest one must have a 160 to 180 cholesterol to make testosterone. How does your guest feel about that?
Oh, fascinating.
Have you not heard that?
Well, you know, your body does turn cholesterol into many hormones, including testosterone.
Yeah.
And you do need cholesterol for that purpose. The trick is you don't have to eat cholesterol. Your body will manufacture cholesterol. So if a person is following a plant-based diet, just like any animal that follows a plant-based diet, you have all the gears and machinery in your body to manufacture cholesterol and to convert it into testosterone.
So the liver makes cholesterol. Is that right? The liver makes it?
The liver makes cholesterol, and the other parts of the body do too, although the liver is the real master at it. And it makes all the cholesterol that you need. And your body uses cholesterol for all kinds of stuff. The trick is you don't need to eat cholesterol. So if you're eating eggs, your body looks at you with a great look of disappointment, saying, didn't I make all the cholesterol you needed? Why do you have to eat more cholesterol?
So what's the average cholesterol, the main number, you know, not the LDL?
Yeah, well,
what's the average one of the people that you work with, and what does it come out at?
Well, they vary all over the map.
Uh-huh.
The average cholesterol in America is roughly 200. And the total number isn't as important as LDL or low density lipoprotein, which people think of as bad cholesterol.
Right.
That's the one we're really worried about. And my target there is to get it below about 100. And you can medicate it down with Lipitor or other statins if you want, but the healthiest way to do it and the most effective way is to not eat any cholesterol and, more importantly, not eat animal fats at all, because it's the saturated fat in animal products and also in coconut oil, which is why I was beaten up on it before the break.
Yeah.
So those are the things that raise cholesterol. Yeah.
So coconut oil does raise cholesterol?
Oh, man, yes, it sure can. And don't take this on faith. You can do the test yourself. Go to the store. First of all, make sure that you are very well insured. And then I'm going to tease you here, but you could go to the store and eat a lot of coconut oil every day for about 2 months and just test your cholesterol. And then stop eating it and go on a vegan diet for 2 months and test your cholesterol again.
But then again, when you say something like that, you're assuming that cholesterol is like a bad thing. And I've just seen so much evidence that that's not true. It's hard for me to, you know, personally to put my arms around that one and believe that. So
I feel your pain.
You understand?
I feel your pain, you know, okay. Because it's true. There are folks who have been sort of naysayers trying to say cholesterol doesn't matter.
Right.
But maybe it's important for people to know what cholesterol really does. When you consume, say, an egg or some chicken breast, the cholesterol that's in those foods gets into your bloodstream, and also the animal fat causes your body to make extra cholesterol. And these little particles get oxidized or damaged. It's like the particle of cholesterol sort of rusting in a way. It irritates the wall of your artery. When it does that, the artery wall develops a little bump we call a plaque. It gradually grows, and you start to discover that you have a little bit of chest pain. And one day while you're driving down the road, that little bump, that atherosclerotic plaque, breaks open like a pimple. And when it does, it causes a clot to form. And if it happens to be in your coronary artery, then blood flow stops, and you get crushing chest pain. And you pull over to the side, and on your cell phone, you call 911 because you had a heart attack. And that happens to about 50% of Americans at some point, and it's their last thing that's ever going to happen to them.
Here's an email. Is the doctor aware of the 1959 research at the NIH by Dr. Klaus Schwartz and Dr. Walter Mertz? They concluded that glucose tolerance factor GTF chromium is a required cofactor to load glucose into the cells. Dr. Mertz reportedly claimed, "We found the cause of diabetes. GTF chromium is also the key for metabolism of fats and proteins. Thus, insulin resistance has been called gross GTF chromium deficiency. It seems that the vegan diet worked because it reduces fat and protein and may increase the amount of dietary GTF chromium trace minerals, which would help resolve diabetes."
Yes, there has been research on chromium, and there's been a lot of interest over time. And there have been a number of studies showing that chromium does help. There have been some contrary studies, but it certainly is something that people can make a case for, and it may well be part of why a plant-based diet is helpful.
At the beginning of the show, writes Linda, she is in, don't know where she is, that the group that was part of this research was advised by dietitians and they went by that diet. I think it's common knowledge for people who understand health and nutrition that dietitians, as we know them today, are totally, in quotes, clueless about nutrition.
Yeah, isn't it sad?
It's probably kind of true. I've talked to some dietitians and, boy, gosh, I mean, I'm not sure I would listen to the ones I've talked to.
And I should perhaps clarify.
Okay.
First of all, let me say a word on behalf of dietitians.
Okay.
People become registered dietitians because they want to be helpful.
Sure.
And they learn a lot about nutrition, and they do, in fact, help many people, and they save people's lives. And I would go further, and I would say if you're a doctor's office and you don't employ a registered dietitian, you ought to put out a want ad and hire one or two or three or four, as we do here at the Barnard Medical Center. That said, there are different qualities of registered dietitians, just as there are doctors. And so when we're doing a study as the one that I described, where the government funded us to do a good test, when we are employing dietitians to teach a conventional diet, we employ really good dietitians who really believe in a conventional diet and are extremely well-trained in it and experienced. And then if we're teaching a vegan diet, then we choose dietitians who believe in and follow a vegan diet, so that they're really good at what they're doing. And that gives us a good, fair test.
Mm-hmm. You know, let's go back to the fat. Most of the people that eat meat, they'll eat steak, right, and things like that. And these are just muscle meats. There's really not a lot of fat in there, is there? Like a ribeye or a porterhouse or, I don't know.
Lots.
Is there fat in there?
It's surprising. Let's say you got skinless chicken breast. I'm talking about chicken breast, you roasted it, you didn't add any fat at all, and you took the skin off. It's still about one quarter fat as a percentage of its calories. It's frightening.
Is that right?
So let me also say that people listening to this program, if they think about it, how many pounds would you really like to lose to be at your ideal weight? Or if you have diabetes right now, would you like to reduce your medicines or get off them completely? If you're on high blood pressure pills, would you like to be able to reduce it? What I ask people to try is a three-week test. You're not making any long-term commitment, but the test goes like this.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do a preliminary week. During the preliminary week, you don't change your diet at all. You don't get rid of anything. But what you do is you think of vegan foods you would like. So you take a piece of paper and write down breakfasts and lunches and dinners and snacks. And in the vegan starter kit, I have lots of examples and recipes and tips for eating fast food. And you take a week, and if you never had almond milk on your cereal, now you're going to taste it. If you never had the bean burrito at Taco Bell, now you're going to taste it. If that's where you go. So the whole idea is we're going to take a week, and we're going to just try the vegan foods wherever they are, and you write down the ones you really do like.
Mm-hmm.
Within 7 days, you'll have all kinds of breakfasts and lunches and dinners. Now, the 3 week starts. For 3 weeks, we're going to actually do it all vegan all the time, but it's not hard because you already wrote down all the foods you like. So for 21 days, you're going to do it all vegan all the time, keep fats low, and then you can stop and size up how you are. And two things will have happened. first of all, you're physically healthier. You're losing weight. If you have diabetes, it is improving already in this short time frame. Hmm. If you have high blood pressure, it's starting to come down. Your energy is better. Your digestion is finally the way you wanted it to be. Your energy is better. But the second thing that happens is your tastes are starting to change, and you didn't expect that. You think, you know, I haven't had any cheese, and I'm kind of glad. And so then at that point, you can think about what you want to do going forward. But the whole reason I wrote the vegan starter kit is to help people with this very cheap, very slim book you can read in an hour, and it will guide you to something that will save your life. And share it with somebody that you know who needs a healthier way to go. Don't give up your skepticism. You don't have to believe it. You have to test it and try it. This is like going to an auto dealership. They hand you the keys. They say, drive it around the block. And by the time you get back, having done 3 weeks on a vegan diet, you will be so glad. So please, you can go on Amazon right now, and it's on pre-order, and it's the cheapest book you ever bought on Amazon. It's very short, but it's got plenty of recipes and everything you need to know. The Vegan Starter Kit will change your life.
Paul wants to know, he's in the UK, so how do you get B12 if you don't taking it? I tried this diet some years ago in an attempt to cure my arthritis, but it didn't do much except make me very ill and lose weight. Wasn't until I went back to a regular diet that I started to feel better. The main problem was a lack of fat and B12.
Okay, well, you do need vitamin B12. You need it for healthy nerves and healthy blood, and it's not made by animals or by plants. It's actually made by bacteria. I encourage people to supplement B12. It's in every multiple vitamin you ever took. Mm-hmm. And you can also just get B12 at the drugstore or health food store, and you should take that. It's also fortified in many foods, but I encourage people, regardless of diet, to take a B12 supplement.
And good probies, too. They help for the gut to make all this stuff, don't they? Good probiotics.
Yes, they do. But, you know, you can have the best organic seeds from the store, but if you put them in bad soil, you got a rotten garden. So if you can take probiotic pills. Those are bacteria you're hoping will seed into your digestive tract. But you need to be eating the foods that give you the healthy fiber to allow those probiotics to flourish.
To grow, right. It's kind of like a prebiotic, right? You got to have
Yes, exactly. And those foods are beans, grains, vegetables, fruits. There was an amazing study.
See, now that's really, I mean, you just said that people could have a lot of fun eating beans and grains and vegetables and fruit, couldn't you? I mean,
absolutely.
Right? I mean, you could do organic brown rice pasta. I mean, come on.
The foods are delicious, and it makes, when I was a kid growing up in Fargo, it was roast beef and, you know.
Oh, yeah, you were in Fargo, man.
Yeah, that was not much of a diet. But now you can do this at the greatest Italian restaurant, the best Mexican restaurant, Chinese, Thai, Vietnamese, anything. They all have their vegan choices that are out of the world better than whatever you had before.
Do folks generally have problems keeping warmer? Well, I guess if you're doing the carbs, though, that'll provide the warmth, right?
You're going to do great. And frankly, if you're heavy and feeling rotten, you don't go outside, you're sitting inside, you're a couch potato. When people start losing weight and feeling better, their ability to run and walk and do things improves. Many, many athletes are going vegan now because their endurance is better. The Williams sisters, Venus Williams developed Sjogren's syndrome, an autoimmune condition. What? Her career tanked. And so to get her career back, she went on a completely vegan diet. She's got her game back. Novak Djokovic, the top male player, just won Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. He's got a vegan restaurant, actually. Lewis Hamilton, who just yesterday finished out the Formula One season, he's the five-time world champion Formula One driver, vegan. So people, their concentration is better, their endurance is better, their athletics are better. And if your whole goal is just to get through life, there is nothing like eating healthy foods. But don't take my word for it. Try it for yourself. 3 weeks, you will become a success story. If you thought you could never get rid of diabetes or never improve, you can't lose that weight, that last 15 pounds or 115 pounds is never going to go away, just give it a try for 3 weeks and you will be sold.
Here's another email before you go. I'm with you. Not too quick to diss the cholesterol due to studies. He said, here's a Norwegian study that followed 60,000 persons for 10 years, found that the risk of mortality from all causes was lowest for men when their total cholesterol level was 200 to 240. For women, the higher the cholesterol, the lower the risk. He has a link here. Pretty interesting.
Yeah. Send it along if you'd like.
I will.
It, It's useful to look at these studies and to be cautious with their interpretation. The vast amount of data shows clearly that a high cholesterol level does, in fact, cause cardiovascular disease. That said, when people are really sick with whatever it is, advanced cancer or you name it, and the liver can't make cholesterol anymore, they end up with a low cholesterol level, but it's because they're sick. And they end up dying from that. So sometimes when people have a low cholesterol level, if it's because of not being in good health, then that will goof your data up.
Here's a funny one from Gloria. I remember when President Bill Clinton stopped eating McDonald's, and there was a lot of news about when he went vegan, and he said now he looks terrible. He looks like he's ready to die.
When I look at those films, it's exactly the opposite. And I met the president a number of years ago.
When he went vegan and vegetarian?
My feeling is he looks great. He lost about 25, 26 pounds. And frankly, he had no choice. He had severe heart disease. And if your choice is undergoing another very dangerous operation, having the brain damage that can result from more anesthesia, or perhaps not even surviving, and if your choice is to eat beans and rice and spaghetti, it's a pretty easy choice. He lost weight. In my view, he looked great. I would encourage anybody to do the same.
So you have mentioned the idea that losing weight, so evidently you run into a lot of people that want to lose weight, right?
In your, well, like two-thirds of the American population.
Is that true? Do two-thirds of the people want to lose weight?
They may or may not want to. When we put them on the scale, two-thirds of Americans are what we would call medically overweight or obese.
Is that right? And you say, and this is what I'm very fascinated with, that people can eat beans and rice and organic, brown rice pasta if they want to not do wheat, and actually lose weight.
Very, very consistently, easily, and more effectively than any other diet.
That's more surprising to me than anything you've said here.
Well, we have published this many times, and in fact, I authored a meta-analysis where we took every study that ever looked at that very question, and there was a lot of them, and it's extremely consistent. Don't take my word for it. Try this as a test. If you give me 3 weeks, you're going to owe me a dollar. Here's what you do. Just take 3 weeks. No animal products at all. Eat all the vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans you want. But also keep the oils low. So I don't want you dipping into the big jar of peanut butter, because remember, oils are fats. Those are your calorie-dense foods. But eat all you want of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans. Keep the oils low and watch what happens to your weight.
Watch what happens.
And watch what happens to the expression on your doctor's face when he's checking your blood sugar, or she is checking your cholesterol level, or they're checking your blood pressure. What we do astounds the doctors who work with the patients that we work with.
Hmm. You know, another thing that's just fun to mention before we go, and I know you have to go back to work, is I think there's a lot to be said too. God love them. I mean, cows are great and everything, but there's a different vibration when you eat a broccoli or eat a cow, you know? I don't know. Over the years, I've just felt more clear when I just eat broccoli rather than cows. But I don't give.
If what you mean is that there's a cruel side of certain dietary patterns, I agree with you. And despite the fact that my father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and everybody else raised animals, and despite the fact that I killed them myself as a child hunting in North Dakota, I have come to view that one of the greatest side benefits of a vegan diet is not just that it can reverse your heart disease, but you're no longer participating in what really is cruel. Americans eat 1 million animals every hour. And to not participate, that means that you're no longer buying this myth that they're somehow just having a nice life, a bucolic life on the hillside. They have a miserable life, and they have a miserable transportation to their death, and I've contributed to that, and I'm not going to do it anymore. Moreover, every rational person understands the climate is changing. That is largely due to animal agriculture. If you put the massive cows on one side of the balance and the massive humans on the other, the cows outweigh us, and each one is belching methane, which is one of the most powerful greenhouse gases we've got. And people are concerned about that, and they're seeing the climate change, but then they go off and have a burger. That's hypocrisy. It's time for us to change. But you don't have to think about those things. You don't have to think about the environment or the animals. You just have to think about your own self-interest or your kids or your spouse.
All right, Dr. Barnard.
And for that reason, we do better.
Well, thanks for being here. It was fun talking to you. The Vegan Starter Kit's the name of your latest book. And you say you can just read it in an afternoon, huh?
Oh, about probably 47 minutes.
47, okay.
Give me 3 weeks. The Vegan Starter Kit will change your life.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a nice day today. We appreciate
it. Nice talking to you.
Okay, it was fun. All right. Vegan Starter Kit, Dr. Barnard. So what do you think? Well, he's definitely into vegan lifestyle. So we're going to talk more about all kinds of stuff, and we're going to do it right now because we can.